praise you, Jesus. Good morning, Pathways. Y'all go ahead and be seated. Y'all knew that anyway, didn't you? Didn't need me to tell you. Well, I don't know what kind of church this is, what kind of heresy y'all are putting out. How can you have a Baptist business meeting and not have reports handed out and then a person stand up and read to you what they just gave you? That's just not right, all right? I don't know. Prayer at a Baptist business meeting. I don't know what the world is coming to these days. Where are the name tags today? We should have had name tags today. You know, you're kind of jamming us up a little bit because, you know, last week we could act like we knew each other, you know, and so we didn't have to call each other, you know, dude or something, you know. Hey, bro, what's going on, you know. But now, you know, there's no name tags, and so we have to kind of act like we didn't forget the name that you just told us last week, you know. So I like name tags. It helps me. I'm a visitor, you know. So I don't know. I'm not in charge around here, but I think we ought to have name tags every week, you know. All right, well, I know who I am. You know, I don't always know what day of the week it is. That's what happens when you're retired. You know, you wake up and go, what day is this, you know? But I haven't yet gotten to the part where I need a name tag that's upside down so I can look at it and see what my name is, but maybe that'll come. I don't know. So good to be here today with Pathways, and man, what worship we had already. Worship through music, you know? Fantastic. So have you ever wrestled with God? If you're a person who not only believes in God, but believes that God is personally involved in our world and indeed in our lives, that he invites us into his very life and calls us into the work that he is doing in this world, then you've probably wrestled with God. Because the things that God wants us to do, we don't want to do them. I don't know, have you ever noticed that? If you listen to ministers describe their call to the ministry, the stories may differ in detail, but they are all, and I mean all, almost without exception, they are all stories of struggling with God, of even arguing with God. And I say almost without exception because I haven't heard every minister's story of their call, but I'm pretty sure it's all, you know. I've heard plenty of stories, and never once have I heard a minister say, you know, I felt God place his call to full-time ministry on my heart, and I just immediately said, yippee, Lord, you know. Or even a more biblical statement, here am I, Lord, send me, you know. No, I've never. The immediate reaction, almost like I said, without exception, is, say what? You want me to do what? You want me to go where? You know, I'm an introvert. You know I'm an introvert, right? I hate public speaking. You want me to do what? Or let me get this straight. You want to call me into a life in which the minimum educational requirement is at least a master's degree and maybe even more, while the pay is little more than what a high school graduate will get. And if you dig even deeper, the struggle is even deeper. According to surveys done by Fuller Institute and Christianity Today and the Barna Group and stuff like that, other Christian institutions, this is some stuff they did in some surveys with pastors and ministers. 72% of the pastors they surveyed report working between 55 and 75 hours every single week. 57% of pastors believe they do not receive a livable wage and are unable to pay their bills. 80% believe that pastoral ministry has negatively affected their families. And many pastors' children, once they grow up, don't attend church anymore because of what the church has done to their parents. 75% of pastors report significant stress-related crises at least once in the ministry. 52% feel overworked and can't meet the church's unrealistic expectations. 54% of pastors find the role of pastor overwhelming. And 35% of pastors battle depression and fears of inadequacy. So yeah, where do I sign up for that, right? When I was in high school, senior year in high school is when I felt the call to ministry, and I didn't know all these statistics, you know, but it was still a struggle, you know. Is God calling me? Has it, and how do you know, right? I didn't get a dove, you know. I didn't get a call that I could hear, you know. And I had to struggle. You know, is this really what I want to do with the rest of my life? And that's the story that I've pretty much heard from every single one of my ministry colleagues, man or woman. But at least it's biblical, you know. You know, before Isaiah uttered those iconic words, "Here I am, send me." Do you remember what he said? "Woe is me," he said. "Woe is me. I am a man of unclean lips." Unclean lips. If there's anything that disqualifies you from ministry, it's unclean lips, right? So then a seraph takes a hot coal and touches it to Isaiah's lips and then says, "There, no more unclean lips, no more excuses," right? I added that last part, but it's actually kind of the gist of what the seraph is doing, taking away Isaiah's excuses. Yeah, and then Isaiah, right? He doesn't say, "Here am I, send me." He got blisters all over his lips and stuff, you know. And then there's Jeremiah. God calls Jeremiah when he is just a boy, and he literally calls him. Jeremiah got a voice. Did you get a voice? I didn't get a voice, all right? Jeremiah gets a voice and says to him, "Before you were even born, I called you to be a prophet." And Jeremiah's like, "Prophet? aren't those all old dudes with beards and stuff? You know, have you checked me out? I'm just a boy. I barely know how to talk." So the Lord reaches out his hand and touches Jeremiah's mouth. There's no burning flesh at this point, you know. And he says, "I will put the words in your mouth, so go. Just go. Be a prophet." So you get the picture, right? Jeremiah had God speak directly to him. Think about this. He had God speak directly to him, reaches out and touches him, and still he wrestles with God. He wrestles with God. So what are the rest of us supposed to do when we don't even get the benefit of a audible voice or a burning coal on our lips or something like that, you know? I mean, if Jeremiah got all of that and still wrestled, of course we're all going to wrestle as well. So what is it that God is calling you to do that you don't want to do? And so you're wrestling with him. Where does he want you to go? Who does he want you to forgive? Because you just know it's going to be someone with whom you're going to say, you know, really? It's not going to be somebody, "Oh, yeah, done and done and done," right? It's going to be someone about whom you'll say, "Do you want me to forgive that rascal? Do you know what he did to me? Do you know what she said about me behind my back? Do you see the way that they treated me?" You're going to wrestle. The most famous story of somebody wrestling with God in the Bible, I think it's probably the most famous, is also one of the weirdest stories in the Bible. It's actually pretty straightforward, except it's hard to take straightforward, and there's a lot of strange elements in it. But it is something that we can all relate to. It's just got a lot of strange elements. So it's the story of Jacob wrestling with God, found in Genesis chapter 32. So let's take a look at that. "Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until daybreak. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he struck him on the hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. And then he said, 'Let me go, for the day is breaking.' But Jacob said, 'I will not let you go unless you bless me.' So he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." And the man said, "You shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with humans and have prevailed." And then Jacob asked him, "Please tell me your name." But he said, "Why is it that you ask my name?" And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the place Peniel, meaning saying, "For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life is preserved." The sun rose upon him as he passed Peniel, limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the Israelites do not eat the thigh muscle that is on the hip socket, because he struck Jacob on the hip socket at the thigh muscle. So you see what I mean about it being a fairly straightforward story with a lot of really strange elements. I mean, you get what's happening, but it's like, oh, but what is happening here, all right? So we're told at the beginning that Jacob wrestles with a man. But when the man changes his name to Israel, one who strives with God, you're like, well, is it a man or was it God, right? Then he explains the name change by saying that Jacob has striven with God and with humans, and now we're not quite sure what kind of being it is that Jacob is grappling with. But then Jacob names the place Peniel, which means the face of God. El being the name of God, as in Israel, Peniel. And so he says, "I've seen God face to face." And so now we're like, oh, well, okay, well, this is no man, even though it says it's a man at the beginning. This is obviously God. And nobody interprets this story as God wrestling with some man. This is a story of Jacob wrestling with God, even though it said at the beginning that it's, you see how confusing it is, right? You see what I mean by weird? And then there's that whole thing about daybreak, right? Where the sun's getting ready to rise, but God hasn't prevailed against Jacob, so he resorts to dislocating Jacob's hip. And why did he wait to daybreak to do this? You know, if he had that in his wheelhouse, why didn't he just do it at like 2 a.m. and be done with it? You know, so who knows? But there's something about daybreak that freaks this guy out. And when the hip dislocating doesn't work, he says, "Let me go, for the day is breaking." And then so then there's like this vampire thing going on. I don't know. Like I said, this is a weird, weird story. But Jacob knows that something bad will happen if he's not gone by the daybreak. So he uses this as leverage. He says, "Bless me or I won't let you go." And then we'll see what happens. Once again, I added that last part, but you get it, right? So, once again, not a man, but not the God who created light and separated light from the darkness. And then this being asked Jacob his name, and presumably God would know his name. So, like I said, it's all very confusing and has to do with Iron Age beliefs and polytheism and stuff. It would take hours for me to explain, and I couldn't adequately do it, you know. But this is one of the oldest stories in the Old Testament, and versions of it probably had been circulating for a few hundred years before anybody wrote this down. But all these things are there, and they're hard to miss, so I have to mention them, but that's not the point of the story. The point of the story is how Israel got its name and what that name means. One who strives with God. One who wrestles with God. One who fights God. And that's a blessing, right? To be given the name that you fight against God, that's a blessing. It's like calling your 10-year-old kid bedwetter. You know what I mean? You know what? From now on, I'm just going to call you bedwetter. I'm tired of washing your sheets every single day, but if that's what I'm going to have to do, then I'm just going to call you bedwetter in front of your friends, right? In front of my friends. This is my son Irving, this is my daughter Wanda, and this is bedwetter, right? Now, I'm just going to call you bedwetter. I'm going to write children's stories. Bedwetter goes to bed. Bedwetter goes to camp and wets the bed. Bedwetter goes to outer space and wets the bed, right? So you see, being called Israel, one who fights against God, one who wrestles against God, this is not a good thing. But it fits. It fits because when you read the Old Testament and you understand the history of Israel, you see that they were always striving against God. Not just striving with God, striving against God. And it's just wrestling, and fighting and resisting and not doing what God calls them to do, what he tells them very plainly to do. They just can't do it. You read the book of Judges, and there's this cycle, right? Israel sins, and God punishes Israel, and Israel repents, and God restores Israel, and then rinse and repeat, on and on and on it goes. They've got no learning curve here, right? And it's not just the pattern in the book of Judges, it's actually the pattern in the whole Old Testament. It's God telling the Israelite prophet Jonah to go to Nineveh. And he hops on a boat and heads the opposite direction towards Tarshish, away from the presence of the Lord, it says. It's God telling Israel, I will lead you into battle and give you a victory. And Israel saying, we'd rather have a king like everybody else. It's God telling Israel, I am the Lord your God. You shall have no other gods before me. And Israel constantly going after other gods like Baal and Asherah and Molech and all kinds of other gods. And before any of us get all judgy on Israel and stuff, how many of you are doing the things that you know you are supposed to do, right? How many of you are doing the things that Jesus has very clearly said that you should be doing? I mean, what, you've just not gotten around to it? Been a little busy or something lately? Or is it that you just really don't want to do what he so clearly tells you to do? But you can't say that part out loud, right? So you just have this internal cognitive dissonance. Do you like that cognitive dissonance, you know? If you have a doctorate, you have to use as many syllables as possible to say, cognitive dissonance, you're wrestling with God. You're fighting with God. You're fighting him on the things that you know you should do, and you just don't want to do it. Or you're scared. Or you really don't trust him. Seems that wrestling with God is our normal spiritual state. It's like Paul says in Romans, I can will what is right, but I can't do it. For I do not do the good that I want, but the evil I do not want is what I do. I delight in the law of God in my inmost self, but I see in my members another law at war with the law of my mind, making me captive to the law of sin that dwells in my members. Wretched man that I am. Wrestling. Now here's what I find fascinating. The story of Jacob wrestling with God is often used as a model for our wrestling with God. You know? And so we're told, grab a hold of God and don't let go until you've received a blessing. Better to wrestle with God than to ignore God or have him ignore you. So at least if you're wrestling with God, it means that you're engaged with him. Or it's used as a model for what the mystics call the dark night of the soul, when fears and doubts assail you and you pray and you pray and you pray and it just seems like your prayers hit the ceiling and come back and God's not listening. He's silent and he's not answering. He's distant and far away. But we're told if you will stay with the struggle, you'll come out on the other side with a blessing. Limping maybe, but with a blessing nonetheless. A blessing that makes the limp worth it. So here's what one commentator had to say about this passage and how to apply it to your life. And I'm not gonna tell you who it is because I'm gonna contradict him in a minute, all right? And I don't wanna disrespect him. But this is just representative for how we've always interpreted this particular story. So he's bringing this article to his conclusion in a section called Keep Wrestling. And he says, so I'll ask again, what do you really need from God right now? What blessing do you want from him? How badly do you want it? God will meet you in your anguish, fear, and uncertainty. But he may not meet you in the way you expect or desire. Your greatest ally may show up looking at first like your adversary, inciting you to wrestle with them. If so, remember Jacob. There are multiple blessings in the wrestling. You may not need soft words of comfort. You may not need to be left alone with your thoughts. You may not need sleep. You may not even need a healthy hip. What you need is God's blessing. So when God calls you to wrestle with him in prayer, it's an invitation to receive his blessing. Stay with him and don't give up. Do not let him go until he blesses you. He loves to bless that kind of tenacious faith, and you will come out transformed. So you hear right there at the end, he makes this connection between wrestling with God and having tenacious faith that God blesses. And I want to be perfectly clear here. Everything that he has said is true. Okay? I don't disagree with anything that he says. God does want to bless you. God will meet you in your anguish and in your uncertainty. He does love tenacious faith. And when you're struggling with life, when you're struggling when you're in your marriage or at work or struggling with your faith, then yes, grab a hold of God and hang on. All of that is true. And you can find all of those lessons in the Bible, but not with this passage. Not with Jacob's story of wrestling. What Jacob does is not good, and you should not do it. See, the key in this story, the part that for whatever reason we seem to miss, is this. It's not just that Jacob wrestled with God, it's that he wrestled and prevailed. That's the issue. Because the last thing you want to do is wrestle with God and win. The last thing you want to do is to impose your will on him, to make him give up and walk away and let you travel your own course and run your own race. And let me tell you, he will do it. He will do it. I mean, not everybody is like Jonah, for whom God sent a big fish to swallow him up and regurgitate him on the shores of Assyria, where he's supposed to go in the first place. No, for most of us, if we board a ship bound for Tarshish, you know where we're going to end up? Tarshish. Wherever that is. And if we're lucky, after we've wasted our life on useless things and we find ourselves feeding pigs who are eating better than we are and wishing we could eat with them, if we are lucky, when we go back to the Lord, we'll find him waiting for us with open arms and a fatted calf. But that's if we come to that realization and come back. He will be waiting. But sometimes when we're in Tarshish, we just get used to Tarshish. So whenever you're ready to go back home, he'll always be waiting. But you know what? Better to just avoid the hassle in the first place, right? It's best not to wrestle with God at all. But if you are going to wrestle with God, make sure you don't win. Make sure you don't prevail, because this is the one time when in winning, you will be the biggest loser of all. And even if you think you've gotten a blessing out of it, the blessing is just going to be, it's just going to be coming away with the reputation as a bedwetter. You know what I mean? Israel, one who struggles against God and thinks that they've won. There's another common element to ministers' call stories that I want to highlight. See, ministers rarely say they heard the call of God on their lives and they struggled, but then they ultimately accepted. The accepted is not the word that they use. You know what the word is? Surrender. Surrender. And yeah, I know it may sound like, you know, the kind of spiritual God talk that we do in church and stuff like that, but it's not, I can guarantee you, not for those who've experienced an authentic call of God on their lives to full-time Christian ministry. It's a surrender. It's waving a white flag and saying, I ain't sure about this. In fact, I got a lot of doubts about it, and I'm not sure it's the best thing for me, but I can't find any peace in fighting it, so I surrender. Not my will be done, but yours. And see, that's what Jacob should have done. That's what Jacob should have done, but he didn't. He kept fighting, and he prevailed. And he became the father of a nation that truly embodies its name, Israel, one who struggles, who fights against God. And they wrestled with God all the way to the Babylonian exile. They wrestled with God after the Babylonian exile. They wrestled with God through the Persian and the Greek and the Roman occupations. They wrestled with God when he sent his own son to them, and they nailed him to the cross. They wrestled with God when they rebelled against Rome in spite of Jesus' many warnings, and then they had to watch as the temple was destroyed. They wrestled with God when they rebelled against the Romans in 135 when they had been warned not to do so, and then the Romans destroyed the rest of Jerusalem and vanquished the Jews from the Holy Land. They wrestled, constantly prevailing against God, even and losing even as they won. And let me be clear about this. This is not an anti-Israel message, all right? This is not a, oh, look at those bad Jews, you know, wrestling with God and rejecting the Messiah. Good thing us Christians have accepted the true Messiah. No, there's none of this. I want to be absolutely clear here. Israel's story is our story. It's your story. Christianity, in fact, has a long and shameful history of wrestling against God and prevailing against him. We think it's good enough to accept Jesus, who Jesus is and what he did on the cross, and then we spend the rest of our time wrestling with him about the things he told us to do, and we don't want to do them. It's always best not to wrestle with God. That just doesn't seem to be our thing. But if you're going to wrestle with God, make sure you lose. Make sure you do not prevail. Because a limp isn't a blessing. It's just a sign that you don't know how to surrender to a good and gracious God who wants better for you than you could ever ask or imagine for yourself. I want our praise team to come up right now, because they're going to lead us in a song that I asked them to do. And it's a song, I guarantee you a lot of y'all are familiar, if not all of you familiar. It's the old hymn, I Surrender All, right? What other song could you do after a message like this, all right? But you understand that when we sing these praise songs or even sing the old hymns and stuff, most of the time they're aspirational, right? They describe what we want to do, what we need to do, but we know as we're singing it that we're falling far short, you know? If we were really honest as we sing this song, we'd say, I surrender one-tenth, I surrender one-tenth, you know? But that's not what the song says. I surrender all to Jesus, I surrender. All to him I freely give. And I will ever love and trust him in his presence daily live. I surrender all. Let's stand together. And let's sing and let this be your prayer of acceptance to the Lord. Even though you know you're going to fall far short, you know. But you're going to fall with style. I just quoted Buzz Lightyear, right? Yeah, you're going to fall short. But Jesus will make up that gap. but he wants you to try. I surrender all. Let's sing together and let this be your response.